Okay, why don't we get started? My name is Colette Fleming. I cover the wireless services for UBS, and I am pleased to introduce Ken Myers, the Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of UScellular.
Good morning. It's good to be with you today to talk about UScellular. I'd like to thank Colette and her team for giving us this opportunity. With me today is Mark Steinkraus, who's responsible for investor relations for both UScellular and TDS, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have once we complete the prepared remarks. Okay, so since we'll be talking about forward-looking information, please review these safe harbor provisions, which are also available on the website, along with the slides and the webcast portion of today's presentation. On November 10th, TDS and UScellular announced that the companies would be restating some prior period results. The restatements will include financial results for the first and second quarter of the year, as well as for the years ended 12/31/2002 through 4. Both TDS and UScellular's press releases are lengthy, and I encourage you to review them. Also, in the November 10th press release, UScellular updated guidance and provided certain third quarter operating results. The company anticipates releasing full third quarter operating results on November 28th before the market opens. Please note that later in this presentation, we will discuss the third quarter operating data that was included in the press releases. However, we'll have to limit the discussion to only the data that was issued in the press release. We also updated our guidance for both companies in the November 10th press release, and I will comment on UScellular's guidance later in the presentation. UScellular is the sixth largest wireless provider in the U.S., serving about 5.3 million customers in 25 states. We deliver our voice and data services over a high-quality CDMA 1X network. We characterize UScellular as a multi-regional carrier with four main operating regions in the U.S. Our largest and most contiguous region is the Midwest, followed by operations in New England, the Mid-Atlantic area, and the Northwest. As a regional carrier, we are able to address the needs of most market segments, particularly focusing on the consumer and small and regional business segments. Our strategy consists of four basic components. First, as I noted earlier, we've positioned the company as a multi-regional carrier with particular emphasis on the Midwest markets, which account for more than 60% of our customers. Second, we differentiate from the competition by providing an exceptional experience for our customers, whether in the form of high-caliber service our associates deliver, our high-quality and reliable networks, or the competitively priced calling plans and products we offer through our broad and local distribution system. Our goal is 100% customer satisfaction with every interaction with the customer. Third, we offer customer service on our upgraded CDMA 1X network, which is in place in all of our markets and operating over an extremely strong network of cell sites. And fourth, we are focused on strengthening our footprint, building on our existing markets and exiting those that do not complement our regional focus. Our strategy at UScellular revolves around total customer satisfaction. We want our customers to stay with us, because it costs less to replace customers than it does to retain them. Additionally, satisfied customers are the best source for referrals and sales of second and third lines. This strategy is proving to be successful as our customer satisfaction surveys and churn rates testify. Churn has been low and steady for many years, and it remains low despite strong competition in our markets, as well as the introduction of wireless number portability. Again this year, UScellular received third-party recognition for our top-notch customer service. In fact, during the quarter, we tied for first place with another CDMA wireless carrier in the customer service category of the J.D. Power and Associates 2005 U.S. Wireless Regional Customer Satisfaction Index for the North Central region. Their North Central region would include our operations in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. Also, in March of this year, consumer unions conducted an analysis of FCC customer complaints about wireless carriers. In an industry plagued by customer dissatisfaction, we are proud of the fact that U.S. Cellular had the fewest complaints and the lowest complaint rate of the top 8 wireless carriers. As you can see on this slide, U.S. Cellular has made excellent progress on the footprint component of our strategy. U.S. Cellular has entered into many transactions that have strengthened our footprint. Of note, it was through the exchange with AT&T Wireless, now Cingular, that we acquired licenses in 4 markets that were recently launched. In 2004, we completed the build-out and launch of Oklahoma City, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Portland, Maine, and each of those is doing well. We are seeing solid customer growth, higher than expected levels of revenue, and great network results. The 4th market is St. Louis, which I will discuss shortly. In addition to the transaction listed on this slide, we also launched service in 8 smaller markets in 2003, all in the Midwest, further strengthening our footprint there. We also purchased a small market next to our Joplin, Missouri operation from Cingular as part of their divestiture related to the merger with AT&T. That transaction closed on April 1st. Most recently, we announced an exchange with Alltel, in which U.S. Cellular will receive 146,000 customers in Kansas and Nebraska, while divesting to Alltel 91,000 customers in Idaho. In addition to customers, both companies will receive the 850 megahertz spectrum, cell sites, retail stores, and agents. This is under normal regulatory review, and we anticipate that it will close this quarter. As you can see on this map, the red area represents the markets that U.S. Cellular is receiving, and the yellow is the markets that we're divesting to Alltel. This exchange strengthens our competitive position in the Midwest. While the Idaho market has performed very well to date, it was not contiguous with our other properties in the Northwest. Therefore, we think this exchange is one that benefits both companies and their customers. We launched St. Louis in late July. St. Louis is a large market, about 2.9 million people in total. We feel strongly that as a new arrival in St. Louis, it was incumbent upon us to launch market operations as flawlessly as possible. For that reason, St. Louis is the only market that we'll be launching this year. We worked hard to build an excellent network with nearly 300 cell sites. We know we've got a good network because a well-respected independent third party performed a drive test of that whole area, and our network was tied for first, despite the fact that it was a brand new network compared to networks that have been up and running for 10 years plus in the other cases. Additionally, that network has actually been up and running since about the 4th quarter of last year, allowing us to reduce roaming costs as our customers from surrounding areas go into St. Louis now using our network instead of paying third parties for that. Along with the network, we designed a strong retail distribution network that makes it easy for the customers. And finally, we worked very hard to ensure that we have well-trained associates in place. One of the things that we learned from prior launches is the importance of people and their ability to take care of the customers on day one. As a result, we not only hire and train new associates, but we also transfer experienced associates from other markets to support the launch efforts, allowing us to place seasoned U.S. Cellular sales and service leaders into the market from the start of operations. As we said back in July, U.S. Cellular does not plan to launch any new markets during the remainder of 2005 and 2006. This way we can focus on St. Louis and the other recently launched markets, ensuring their success. One of our entities in which we are a limited partner, Cura Wireless, participated in the FCC's auction 58 in February and was a successful bidder for 17 licenses, principally 10 megahertz licenses. The 17 licensed areas cover portions of about 11 states and represent markets that are either adjacent to or overlap current U.S. Cellular markets, which is another example of our strengthening of our footprint. The license represents about 14.4 million POPs, about half of which is incremental to what we already have. The other half overlays or has the potential of adding additional capacity in markets that we already operate. Complementing our enhanced footprint is the CDMA 1X technology, which we now have in all of our markets, having completed a three-year project last year. CDMA 1X benefits both customers and the company in the form of improved quality, network coverage, data capabilities, and voice capacity. With CDMA 1X, we are also well positioned to upgrade our networks to future technologies if and when that's appropriate. The upgraded network enables us to support our EasyEdge suite of data services in all of our markets. EasyEdge consists of two main services, phone download applications and picture messaging. We also offer our business customers a wireless modem service under the EasyEdge brand of services. Our data services are doing very well with customer uptake above expectations. Data represented over 2.5% of our service revenue for 2004, or $67 million. And in the second quarter of 2005, data revenues were $31 million, or 4.5% of service revenues. We have not provided data revenue for the third quarter, but will with our release later this month. We continue to see strong growth in both short messaging services as well as our EasyEdge services. We expect this growth to continue as more and more customers become familiar with the concept and increase their usage as we continue to enhance the service itself. Last year, we added NWeb, a feature that allows internet browsing to our download applications. In March, we added AOL's Instant Messenger, a feature we expect to be very popular with younger EasyEdge customers. We also implemented inter-carrier delivery of picture messaging with other major wireless carriers earlier this year, further improving the value of this service to our customers. We launched our walkie-talkie style service, SpeedTalk, in July. SpeedTalk is U.S. Cellular's first press-to-talk product and operates over the company's highly regarded digital network. This service is marketed to retail and business customers in service packages that both offer traditional voice as well as the push-to-talk service. Initial customer reactions have been very positive. We further plan to continue enhancing our services offerings this year and beyond. We expect to enable data roaming over the next couple of months, i.e. before the end of this year, so that our customers can access their data services when they travel outside of U.S. Cellular's area. Looking to the future, we are currently conducting technical trials for EVDO, the advanced wireless technology that provides data connections at broadband speeds. Our strategy for any new technology is to assess it on several levels. First, we want to make sure that it is a platform that provides services and applications that our customers want and value, and then that the applications meet our quality standards. Once we're satisfied on that level, we make sure we can fully support the new technology and applications through both our sales and customer service organizations. At this point, we're evaluating EVDO from a business standpoint. The current questions revolve around which enhanced services will our customers actually value and what are the potential returns on any large-scale investment. Our current plans are to test EVDO in one market through 2005 and 2006. There will be a technical trial this year, a marketing trial next year. Any widespread deployment will depend upon the results of those tests, as well as the availability of what's called Release A, which should be available late 2006 or early 2007. Release A offers higher speeds, particularly on the uplink side. This slide shows you third quarter data that we have released. Customer growth is 10% year over year, and minutes of use per customer up about 16%, affecting both the number of cell sites as well as the systems operations area. As it has been the case now for several years, postpaid churn was low at 1.5%. Again, is one of the key drivers in showing the effect of our focus on customer satisfaction. This slide shows the third quarter ranges that we provided in our press release. Based upon analyst estimates, we think that we are in the upper range of most analyst expectations around revenue and other financial metrics. We will provide more insight on third quarter operating results when we release the full results on November 28th. In terms of strengthening the balance sheet, we have continued our refinancing activities, which are designed to further strengthen the balance sheet and provide the company with financial flexibility and ample liquidity. Taking advantage of the lower interest rate environment in 2004, we issued $430 million of long-term debt, which was used to redeem $413 million of U.S. cellular debt, including about $163 million of convertible debt, eliminating the potential dilution. In addition to locking in the favorable interest rates, these transactions lengthened debt maturities and provided flexibility with call provisions. We also amended our revolving credit facility, extending it 2 years to the end of 2009, and improving terms and costs of those borrowing facilities. U.S. Cellular is investment grade rated, and we have every intention of maintaining that rating going forward. Before I wrap up, I'd like to mention two below-the-line items. Historically, Vodafone has paid an annual dividend in the second and fourth quarter. We expect to receive the same dividend amount in the fourth quarter that was received in the second quarter, which was approximately $3.6 million. In addition, we continue to receive investment income from our investment or minority interests. We updated our full year guidance on November 10th. The only change from previous guidance is that we brought down our retail net add guidance. The previous guidance was 475,000 to 525,000. We are now expecting a range of 400 to 425,000. The change is primarily due to fewer gross customer activations. The slowdown appears to be pervasive across most of our geographies, and in part is due to price increases on our prepaid offerings that we put through during the quarter. Here's the mandatory slide that reconciles one set of numbers to some of the other more commonly looked at metrics. Now, we're excited about our prospects. Our plans for 2005 are to continue to operate our model, which focuses on the customer and drives excellence of execution. Key goals for this year are to successfully launch this U.S. cellular service in St. Louis, which we have done, while continuing to enhance our data services to profitably grow in our current markets. As I noted earlier, we have introduced several major data offerings this year. This means growing our customer base in the markets launched last year, continuing to strengthen our market position in Chicago, and driving deeper penetration in our more mature markets such as Milwaukee, Madison, and Cedar Rapids. We have a proven strategy in place, a strategy based on satisfying the customer in order to drive long-term profitable growth. And we're sticking with it and performing well against it. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh, there are people out there.
quick question on that last slide before this one. You said the significant drop in your expectations for subscribers this year was due in part to price increases on prepaid offerings?
Yes, sir.
Magnitude of those price increases, implications for profitability, why that change in strategy?
Up until third quarter of last year, we were missing a big part of the prepaid growth just based upon the functionality of our prepaid product. We made some changes last year to it and got a lot of good growth that was kind of what I'll call pent-up demand. As that grew, we saw some loss on our postpaid side, and we are primarily a postpaid provider. That's where the real value of our whole customer satisfaction strategy comes from. So we looked at that product and made some price changes that are, they have the effect of increasing the cost of that so as to minimize the overlap with our postpaid product. And as a result, we saw some slowdown there.
Yes. So where will we see, is, are we going to see incremental profitability improvement in your operating margin from that change, or you know, what's the impact either?
I think what you'll see is you'll see less of an effect on average revenue per customer from a customer group that gives you revenue that's maybe three quarters of what your average postpaid customer is. And with a much lower cost per gross add, but similar operating costs, so over time it ought to improve that.
Just a couple questions with respect to the restatement that was announced. One, I guess your confidence level in terms of the ranges that were provided for the previous year's restatements. You know, you had fairly tight ranges there. Should we imply from that that you know you guys, based on the work that's been done to date, feel very good that the ultimate restatement will be within those ranges? Secondly, in the press release, you talked about the potential for technical default on the credit facility and that you were going to seek amendments from your bank lenders. Wanted to know where you were in that process. And then finally, you saw some rating actions subsequent to the announcement. If you could maybe update us on your conversations with the agencies and specifically, you know, what steps are they looking for you to take in order to stabilize or, more importantly, improve those ratings? Thanks.
Let me, don't take the microphone away from him. I'm going to try to get all of them, but I may miss one. First of all, we wouldn't have put ranges in there if we weren't comfortable that we would be able to be within those ranges. That was the first part of the question. The second part, yes, we've had discussions with the banks immediately, and the statement in there, in the press release in the 8K that indicates that we expect there not to be an issue there is based upon those conversations. The third part was rating agencies. Among the different rating agencies, there's different views of the wireless industry right now and where it goes. One of the rating agencies is more concerned than the others, and as far as that agency goes, I think the key driver is going to be free cash flow. And anything short of free cash flow is, you know, less important to that agency than the other two.
Just, I guess, as a follow-up, in terms of the restatement itself, you know, the press release articulated that there's, you know, four or five various areas. What prompted the actual restatement? Was this just part of normal sign-off on the quarter? Or what was kind of going on behind the scenes that caught it now rather than maybe when you filed the 10-K with the initial Sarbanes-Oxley sign-off?
I'm pretty limited to the four pages of the four corners of the press release. Each of the prior years was audited, was signed off. I think that you know, in today's world, in yesterday's world, once a year was signed off, it was signed off. In today's world, those years continue to live on. And so as a result, you can find yourself where things that are immaterial and accepted in each year suddenly, you know, say, well, now wait a minute, you know, we ought to go back and change it. And that's where we found ourselves.
Ken, can I just follow up maybe on the net adds? I guess if you could just talk about, I know we've seen a slowing of gross adds in the industry, but I think people were just surprised with the cut in the nets given that you're going into the holiday selling season and, you know, you really wouldn't really know at this point in time anyway how ads are going necessarily, you know, since so much of it is back-end loaded. Do you feel that this is just a conservative number that you hope to beat, or is it a reflection of maybe St. Louis not living up to expectations in terms of launch, or
No, it actually has nothing to do with St. Louis. St. Louis is exactly where we planned, hoped, whatever adjective you want to put or adverb you want to put there, St. Louis is doing just fine. The other launch markets are equally doing just fine. In the third quarter, particularly August and September, we saw a slowdown across the board. And it was based upon what we saw in those 2 months that we decided that we needed to bring down our total year guidance. You know, trying to do that as you go into the fourth quarter, which is always an unknown, is, you know, a risky proposition, that if you bring it down too low in the fourth quarter, is the fourth quarter of the past? You know, you look like you're Chicken Little. On the other hand, given what we saw in those two quarters, it necessitated that we share that thinking with our investors.
Okay, fair enough. You want to go ahead?
I'll take another one, maybe from a strategic perspective. Understanding the focus and the success you've had in terms of as a super regional and the customer service driven aspect, but if you roll the clock forward several years, do you think that is a strategy that is sustainable when you are competing against, I guess, carriers that benefit from tremendous scale advantage, national networks? How does USM fit into that landscape, not just today, but really down the road?
A couple different aspects to that. First of all, in setting our strategy around being a regional carrier, we looked at a lot of different industries that had gone through consolidation, where certain players had advantages of size and scale. And we found multiple cases where a company that didn't have the same size and scale was able to generate equivalent or better returns. And in each case, the recurring theme was a customer satisfaction focused strategy. So yes, it can be done. Two, when we think about the actual customer himself and what it is that they look for, how they use the phone, notwithstanding the people in this room, the vast majority of the market does not travel anywhere near like we do. And so in our case today, only 6% of our customers' minutes of use are off of our network. 94% of them are on net. And while the voice product had this ubiquitous service, you can get your calls delivered wherever you are at, the risk to us was that did not exist on the data side, that your data offering, whoever you are, was limited to your footprint. Well, with the introduction of these, of data roaming, which we will have in place by year end, we've eliminated that issue from a customer product set, while at the same time opening up the opportunity to actually make money providing that same type of roaming services to other CDMA carriers. So we think, in fact, we can be successful. We look at our older markets and the market share that we have in there and the cash flow that's coming out of those that, quite frankly, we're using to fund the startups in our other markets, and we're very comfortable with the strategy right now. Chuck.
Following on to that question in two parts, so you've got the regional, super regional strategy, but one of the things we've heard here and at other events is your competitors going to a triple play strategy. And how do you compete in that, number one? And then just a detailed question. If I look at roaming revenues, what you pay out versus what you bring in, if you could just give us a sense of that and where that's going.
Okay.
Thank you.
The triple play, in terms of how it's currently being talked about, is different. Up until the discussion of perhaps the cable opportunity, as people talked about bundling from a telephone standpoint, our view was always, I don't need to bundle because I'm talking about replacing. Okay? I mean, you know, if you think about what was the bundling, the bundling was long distance, it was local, it was wireless. Well, wireless could provide all those different services. How much demand there is for, you know, the picture part of that in terms of, you know, home applications, I'm not sure. I think that, you know, anytime you bundle, there's two big challenges that we've looked at. One is just the cost of trying to integrate it. You've got large legacy systems that if you really want to be effective with your customer, you have to somehow bring together. And those are very, very diverse systems you need to bring together. And the second is you have a very different customer expectation. If I am a customer who with three suppliers and I'm paying each one of them $50 a month, I have a certain expectation of service. Well, if I'm going to suddenly pay one $140, the level of service I expect is much, much higher. And the ability to do that in an environment where this back office, three different back offices need to be brought together is extraordinarily difficult. So, you know, we're aware of it, we see it. Yeah, I'm sure there is going to be a segment of the market that appreciates that. But in all the bundling studies that we have seen, people are willing to bundle for a discount. And oh, by the way, you know, that puts you in a weird place. I can bundle if I will buy a bundle from you if you discount it, but in order for you to deliver me that bundle, you've got more costs to deal with that aren't in the individual businesses today. So we're going to watch it. I mean, there isn't a firm answer one way or another. I'm sure that there's a segment of the market that it may affect, but at this point in time, we just don't see it as a big thing yet.
Sort of relative roaming costs, roaming.
I don't talk about specific rates, okay? And I don't because it's an average, and as soon as I talk about an average, anybody that's above my average is knocking at my door tomorrow about why am I paying you above average. Net roaming, which is the difference between what we pay out and what we receive, has been a positive number, a contributor to the bottom line. It remains a contributor to the bottom line, though the gross amount of the two numbers has changed dramatically. In fact, I think if you look at earlier year-over-year comparisons, you'll see quarters where systems operations expense were almost flat year-over-year, notwithstanding the fact that there are more cell sites, more minutes of use by the customer, and more customers being served. And what you're seeing there is you very clearly get to see the roaming revenue change year-over-year because we break that out. Well, what's keeping system operations expense flat is that you've got an increase in cell sites and related costs offset by a larger decrease in your roaming costs.
Ken, can I just follow on to that comment about bundling? I guess if you don't believe that bundling is necessarily, you know, important, which is, you know, I think that if you're a wireless company and you want to replace those landline, you know, maybe bundling isn't as important for you. Then I guess I would take the view as why would you want to be recombined with TDS versus being spun off as an independent company where you could actually really go after landline? If the bundle isn't important, why does it make sense to recombine?
I don't think I can answer that question because the question, it isn't, as an 82% owned company, okay, it's not my company's decision whether we recombine or not, okay? Whether there's any action taken on that part, it would happen at the TDS level. And so that question is one that TDS, I can't answer. I'm on the other side of that wall.
Okay, but maybe taking it a different way, if you look strategically at what...
Let me continue going down. So forgetting the recombination, in fact, you know, we continue to offer products and services that continue to drive displacement or replacement all the time. I mean, if you think about what the industry's done with free nights and weekends, you know, I would argue that a lot of those calls were being made before. They're simply being made on the wireless network now, further increasing the value of that wireless offering. You know, in when I look at through my own filter, but look at, you know, the teenage market, being the proud father of two teenagers, you know, what do I see? You know, their friends don't call on the second line in the house, you know, which has been there historically. They call on their cellular phones because they know that they will reach them at that number versus maybe they're home, maybe they aren't. And so the fact that, you know, we have a parent company that also owns a telephone company has not slowed down any efforts that we take around trying to build our customer bases. All the way back.
Could you help us understand the strategy of taking the free cash flow from your profitable, more mature markets and using that to build out new markets, which are likely to have more competition and likely less profitable, if profitable at all right now? And then the second question is, if those markets aren't profitable that you're building out currently, at what point do you expect that to turn?
Okay, let's start with the first part of that. In fact, any, whether it be M&A transaction we do, any new market launch we do, all those decisions are based upon extensive market that then leads to financial analysis that says, you know, can we generate a return worth this risk? Okay, so what we've got is we've got a portfolio of companies that really, of operations, that really are three different pieces, okay? The more mature ones that are generating this cash flow, and then these markets that we've just launched, and then we've got this group of markets that are 2 to 4 years old. And in each case, we look at it and say, okay, can we generate sufficient return? Is this an investment we want to make? And if, in fact, it is, you know, we will launch that market. There have been markets that we've looked at in other opportunities, whether they be through auctions or whatever, that we said we can't get the return necessary in out of making that investment, so we never make it. So each one of them is a case-by-case basis. Today, you know, if I talk about St. Louis, Oak City, and everything else, they are not profitable. In fact, their stage, if you think about it, you've built a network, and so you've got all the cell site costs and everything else. And the faster you grow right now, you are on a increasingly negative trajectory as you build that base. And depending upon how fast you grow early on, you could have a line that's got a slope like that or one like that. And quite frankly, the faster you grow, the steeper that line is, and then it's also the faster that it turns. And so each of those, if we look at them, those three that we launched a year ago, we are actually above where we thought we'd be, i.e. we've gotten more growth at less cost, and they're moving fast to break even and faster than we thought. Okay then, well, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate this opportunity, Colette.
Thank you.